welcome to Hype episode 187. My name is Selena and I'm joined by Pam this week for another week of exciting and scandalous and dramatic entertainment news stories. Hi, Pam.
Hi, Selena.
How are you feeling after this week's bloodbath of television stories?
Oh, man, I'm surprised I was able to crawl out of the cluster fluff that was renewals and cancellations.
I know. We have some really fun stories to talk about this week. Actually, we've picked some out to talk about that we find particularly interesting or relevant, like shows that we care about. But in our Patreon bonus segment, which if you're a patron, if you subscribe with $2 a month, you can access that over on patreon.com/hypepodcast. We are going to be talking a little bit more specifically about this TV season and sort of the trend of shows, like really popular shows, getting canceled. And then immediately fans are like, all right, so who's going to pick this up? Like, how are we going to get this renewed? It's a really fun, like interesting trend that's happening right now. So we do want to spend some more time talking about that. But in this main show, we will be discussing some of the biggest TV stories, as well as, of course, movies and more television. It's going to be a lot of television, you guys. Before we get into that, as always, we want to remind you of the contact information. So if you have any comments on anything we talk about, or if you have any suggestions for us, or anything you want to say about the things we talk about this week, you can email us hype@hypeable.com, and you can tweet us @hypeablehype. You can also find this podcast on Hypeable itself, which is hypable.com, and you can find our Tumblr at hypepodcast.tumblr.com and our Instagram, which is @hypeablehype. But if you do want to leave us comments, then Twitter @hypeablehype and email hype@hypeable.com are the best ways to do that. We also do want to keep you updated about some of our summer plans, because both me and Pam are going to be doing fun fandom-related things over the summer, and we might be utilizing our Instagram a little bit more for that, and we'll be tweeting out stuff, so keep your eye on that. And as I said before, we have a Tumblr, we have a Patreon, patreon.com/hypepodcasts, where there are bonus segments and videos and stuff like that. We're planning a giveaway surrounding a San Diego Comic-Con for our patrons, which we will let you know about soon. All right, so without further ado, let us head into How We Hype, where we talk about something we've done in fandom this past week. Pam, what have you been doing?
I wanted to hear about yours, but I'll talk about mine. I feel like it's been a while since that's a lie. It hasn't been a while since I talked about music, because we talked about This Is America and Janelle Monáe's Dirty Computer a show ago. So that's a lie. But I do feel like I've been slacking on music recommendations, and I don't want to say that's like my thing, but it's a thing that I do. And there are a few things that I've been really enjoying lately. The first is a new album by Beach House titled Seven. Ironically, it's not seven tracks. It's actually 11 tracks. Beach House is one of these bands that I've been following for a really long time. It's actually like a duo, and they're just so, so great. They created one of my favorite albums ever, Depression Sherry, and it's been a while since they came out with new music, so this was really exciting for fans of the band. They're very like synth heavy, dreamy pop, and it's just so pleasing to the ears. Like, I can't describe it better than that. It's just like a really nice listen. You feel like you're kind of floating and drifting along with this music. So if you like pop that is just kind of like really smooth, I highly recommend checking out Beach House if you have not yet. Two of my favorite tracks, which I actually uploaded to my How We Hype playlist over on Spotify. I've been actually like curating that over the past like 48 hours because I realized that I've been slacking on updating it. But I did put a few of my favorite tracks off of the new Beach House album on there. So I put Drunk in LA on there and Dive. Those are probably like my two favorites, but the album is really great. And like I said, if you've never really dived into Beach House as a band, highly recommend Depression Cherry, which is wonderful and arguably like probably their best album. Space Song specifically off of that is just wonderful, and it's a really nice like indicator of like the sound that they tend to embody. And then the other single that I wanted to talk about was New Light by John Mayer. I feel like John Mayer as an artist is like very polarizing. People either like love his music or hate his music, but New Light specifically, for any of you that do keep up with like music news, is like really funny because John Mayer is by no means a small artist, but none of his songs ever really go the distance. And I think even John Mayer is surprised by how good New Light is doing. It's actually like the number one stream song on Spotify right now, and with good reason, because it's not necessarily like a summer jam, but it is a very good like springing to summer, up like mid-tempo song. And it's just like really relatable and really catchy. And yeah, it's great. It's like basically John Mayer on steroids, just because like usually his stuff tends to be a bit more mellow. But yeah, even if you don't like John Mayer, I highly recommend checking out New Light, because it is like the song that everybody's talking about, and everybody's just kind of like really surprised that they like this, even if they don't necessarily enjoy most of his other music. So that's kind of interesting.
Oh, interesting. I don't have any particularly strong feelings for or against John Mayer, so I will definitely be checking this out. I did start listening to Janelle Monáe's Dirty Computer, but I only got as far as Dirty Computer itself, and I thought that was like really weird, so I stopped listening.
It's not for everyone.
Wasn't, like, the jam I was expecting.
But I will say that like that the song Dirty Computer is like kind of like really mellow. Then you get towards like the middle of the album and it just like kind of explodes into this really like catchy, like springy bop central area. And I actually did put a few of my favorite Janelle Monáe Dirty Computer tracks on the Spotify playlist too. Dirty Computer's on there, but Take a Bite is really great. I Like That is really great. It's just, yeah, I don't know. I really like this album a lot. But if you guys are looking for like, you know, just like favorite picks, I like to try to do that anytime I recommend an album in full, because I know that not everybody wants to spend 45 minutes listening to like a full album. So yeah, Spotify is a great place to kind of get like your highlights reel, kind of, if you follow along with my music recs.
Yeah. Okay, so my recommendation this week is, again, my Pam like wanted to talk about it because it's been like kind of recurring thing on the show, and it's kind of a miracle that I am only just talking about it now. A Fangirl by Rainbow Rowell. A few of you may have heard of it. It's like the book that defined our generation and our community. I'd never read it, Fangirl, because I talked about this on the show before. Partly, I was mad at this book because a part of you always think, well, you know, I'm the fangirl. I should have written this. What the hell, Rainbow Rowell? How dare you? Or like mad that you didn't get the idea first. So that's like half the reason why I didn't read it. The other half I didn't read it was because I was like afraid of what it said, you know, because it like, this is you, like, this is us, this is our life. And so I remember it came out, I think I was still, obviously was still at uni because I only just graduated, but I think I was still at early uni when it came out. And if you don't know Fangirl, the book, it's a book about a girl who's a fan and she writes fan fiction, and it's like, you know, Harry Draco fanfiction disguised as Simon Snow, which is this made up thing for the book. And it's very, and sort of she has, so yeah, so I never read it. I always hated it on principle and was jealous of it and afraid of it. But I don't know why, but I think it's actually because it recently came up on hype and it was sort of in my brain, and I'm taking a break from the Heir of Fire or whatever it's called, the series that I've been reading that just goes on and on and on and on. So I was like, all right, I need something lighter. It's nice out. I want to sit on my balcony and read a book. So I got Fangirl. And I don't know why I was so afraid of this book. Like, it's just a book. you've read it, right?
Yeah. And I will tell you that, like, I read this when it came out and I had to take breaks because it hits, like, uncomfortably close to home for me. Like it does, right, with a lot of people like us.
Yeah.
And it's hard because it's like you're looking in this mirror, and I feel like it shines a spotlight on a very specific time in my life. And I try to kind of glaze over that part because like Kath is not like, she's not cool. She's really awkward. And, like, mm-hmm. the cringe attack is real, you guys. It's really hard to, like, enjoy her story, but also try to forget awkward moments that you had. I definitely was that kid when I had trouble making friends. I was like, I'm just going to go to the library and spend all my time there and write fan fiction at the library because that's what I do for fun. You know, it's like, I don't know. It's hard.
Yeah.
It's hard to read this book, but it's good.
Right. I think if I'd read it 5 years ago, I probably would have felt the same way. I think, like, now reading it, I'm sort of very removed from, you know, the university part of my life. I'm very removed from sort of that part of it. Because I think what we're doing now with fandom, we're sort of moving into using it. All right, how can we actually use it, like, for a career? It's not something that's necessarily holding us back because we're leaning into it. So that probably made it, like, less sort of scary for me to read now. But I do want to say, and it's not that I know, not to, like, shade this book, because I do agree that it is relatable to a point. But I also just found myself sort of being a little bit like, this does not really represent a fangirl experience, because, like, Kath may be a fangirl, but the people around her sort of, I don't know, I know I'm being, like, super overly critical now, but just, like, comparing it to, like, your own experience, like, Kath is an awkward teenager who writes fan fiction, but the, like, she has, like, not one, but two boys, or one boy at least, who's, like, determined to, like her and be nice, and she's just, like, the perfect guy, and he wants only her, and he loves, like, everything about her, and she is extremely talented to the point where her teacher, like, hunts her down and is like, no, you have to read the story, like, write the story, like, of all her, and she's, like, in this class, like, writing class in advance, and she's such a prodigy. Like, she is, in a way, the Harry Potter of this story, which is super meta and super well done, but it does kind of make it harder to relate to her, because she, like, literally has people falling over themselves to be her friend, despite the fact that she, like, if you are socially awkward, if you're escaping into a world of fiction, it's because you don't have people around you who are, like, so willing to, like, fall over themselves to drag you out of that and sort of accept you for who you are. It's all just, it's so like sugary sweet, to the point where it just kind of felt, honestly, a little bit insulting to a fangirl that would be like Kath and who would never in a million years have people around her that would be that understanding and loving and helpful, and, like, no matter where she goes, like, three people are ready to, like, drive her there. And I'm like, that, no, if you're, like, socially awkward, like, you would not ask someone to drive you all night, no matter what. So anyway, I'm sorry. I should have read it 5 years ago, because I'm now at a point where I'm like, nope, not realistic. And I also find it weird that she didn't have any online friends. That was just, like, another tiny thing that I thought was really bizarre, because if you're, like, in fandom and stuff, I find it really strange how you can be that involved in fandom without actually engaging with anyone online. I didn't love it.
That's interesting. I don't remember the specifics. If this book came out 5 years ago, then it's been 5 years since I read it. Yeah. And maybe it is, like, one of those things where it's like, if you read it during a specific point in your life, like, it is kind of different and
it
stuff.
It captured a lot of being a fan. I will say her, like, that character was, like, spot on. It was more like the people around her that were too magical for it to, like, it almost annoyed me, because I was like, no one would ever actually have that experience.
I could see why that would annoy you. The friend online thing, though, I can kind of, like, I'll forgive that, because a lot of, like, your experience online is also dependent on, like, the places you visit. So if, like, you were a kid of forums, which I think both of us, like, used to be on forums, like, there are some forums that are super inviting and you can definitely find your people. And there are others that are, like, really hard to kind of get into. So if you're somebody that, like, already struggles, like, making friends and stuff like that, like, I don't know. I feel like sometimes, like, with characters like this, where, like, there's a lot of, like, depth to them, but you can also see a lot of yourself in them, you start, like, making excuses for why this person, like, might not have been able to do XYZ. So that didn't necessarily bother me. I just think that she was just, like, too awkward you know?
Yeah.
Like, she wouldn't even really, like, awkward. Like, she just, like, stuck to her own little corner of the internet, which was, like, her fan fiction.
Yeah. But then if she was that awkward, then she would never, like, there wouldn't be people, like, people would leave her alone. Like, they wouldn't be that in drawing her out. She got, like, everything, literally everything she wanted. Her life was extremely perfect, and people were, like, again, falling over themselves to, like, pull her out of her bubble. And when you're, like, awkward, that doesn't happen. Anyway, sorry, this is not about that.
So it gives, what you're saying is it gives people like Kath false hope.
Yes.
You don't have to try.
That's exactly what I'm saying.
Yeah, to fit into society.
Yes. So yeah, so but all the fan fiction stuff, I might want to read Carry On, actually, because I love that that exists, and I thought
Carry
the
On
fan fiction
is like
were great.
That's the book I regret not reading.
Oh,
it's like putting off for so long. I enjoyed that way more than I thought I was going to, and I finally read it after Cursed Child because I was so mad that Scorbus was not canon.
That's so funny.
And then I was like, why didn't I read this sooner? It's so good.
Yeah. I might read that one. And like, again, it's like the part, like half of it, all the fandom stuff, I was like, all right, great. She gets it. This is so cool. And all the like magical people around Kath who were like too perfect and whose lives seemingly revolved around making Kath's dream come true. I was like, no, it's too unrealistic. This is like Harry being the chosen one. Kath is not the chosen one. This doesn't make any sense. So yeah. Anyway, that was Fangirl. I'm glad that I had read it now, because now I don't have to worry that she like captured my soul on a page, because that's not exactly what she did. So we're okay.
No, I was just going to say that we need to put a pin in this, because I feel like there's a bigger conversation to be had about how like stories about fandom are like kind of coming into the spotlight in like young adult and new adult novels. Mm-hmm. Like there's like an influx of, you know, like Geekerella was like a story about like con romance. And then there's Fangirl, which is like, you know, the fangirl experience. And so, yeah, let's put a pin in that. If you guys are interested, let us know if you guys are interested, because I'm interested.
Yeah, I'm interested. Sure. But for now, we have some entertainment news stories that we do want to get to. And we're going to start with a little bit of movie news. And then on out, it's pretty much TV. So you've got the movies.
I do, yeah. So Captain Marvel obviously is a movie that we're going to be getting on the big screen in a few years. It stars Brie Larson, and that's really exciting. But for comic book fans, you might know that Captain Marvel has a protege, Miss Marvel, who is actually portrayed by Kamala Khan. Also, like in in the comics, like her alter ego is Miss Marvel, but she is Kamala Khan. And this is like a really big deal to a lot of people, because Kamala is actually a Muslim hero. And that's somebody like that, you know, it's like someone that we don't necessarily usually see take up the superhero mantle. So has definitely inspired a lot of people over the course of her lifespan on the page. And we learned that Miss Marvel is actually something that Kevin Feige and everybody over at Marvel is interested in bringing to life on the big screen. So this is a pretty big deal. So in a recent interview, Feige said, "We're doing Captain Marvel right now. Captain Marvel is shooting right now with Brie Larson. Miss Marvel, which is another character in the comic books, the Muslim hero who was inspired by Captain Marvel, is definitely in the works. We have plans for that once we've introduced Captain Marvel." So this is definitely super exciting for fans of the superhero, and also a big win for representation in general, because, you know, obviously, like, a lot, like, we're focused a lot right now on, like, trying to get more women at the forefront of these superhero stories, which is also really great. But nobody ever thought that we'd get, you know, a woman who also happens to be a minority up there on the big screen. So this is really, really, really cool. And I'm really excited to see what they do. And so many people are really excited about this. If you guys have been following the Miss Marvel tag over on Twitter, you will know that Riz Ahmed and Mindy Kaling were both tweeting about being in cahoots to like get tapped to be in this movie or like write the movie. So there's so many really awesome actors of color that are really excited for this. And there's so many fans of this comic book that are also really excited for this to come to fruition. So hopefully they're able to get it off the ground. And I'll be really excited to hear more about this after they're done with Captain Marvel.
This is so cool. I'm so excited. Slowly but surely moving in a good direction.
And we have our other piece of movie news. We got a new trailer this week as well for the upcoming Queen biopic Bohemian Rhapsody. This movie has been in production for a while, and they actually halted production during the sexual misconduct allegations that flooding Hollywood that last year, because Bryan Singer was actually involved in this, and they had to halt to kind of like take him off the project, and then they went back to the project. So it's kind of good to know that it's still alive and well. Rami Malek, who is best known for his role on Mr. Robot, is actually playing Freddie Mercury in the movie. And I know a lot of people wanted to see Sacha Baron Cohen portray Freddie Mercury, and he was actually attached to star in this back in 2010. So this movie's been in the works for a while, and he actually ended up dropping out due to creative differences, and that's when Rami stepped into the role. So I think that there was a lot of, like, you know, speculation over whether he'd do a good job. But if you've taken a look at the trailer, it really looks like he's really fully assumed this role and stepped into it. It's super fun. It's set to Bohemian Rhapsody, of course, because that is the name of the movie. And it just looks really fun. I'm a sucker for a good music biopic. I don't know if you've seen the trailer yet.
I haven't yet. I'm a little bit, like, weirdly afraid of it because I've heard some mixed feelings from people, so I'm like, I don't know, but I've seen like some of the stills and just things that pop up on Twitter, and what's his name, Rami Malek, is just like a spot on Freddie Mercury. It's really scary, actually.
Yeah, he really like went in for this role, like you can just tell, and he looks so good. We saw a couple of stills too at the end of last year, and so we already kind of knew that he really bared a strange striking resemblance to the late singer, but it's kind of crazy to see him in action. So obviously, like, the story of Queen could span many, many years, but this biopic in particular is set to tell the story of the band from their rise and fall up into the point in which they performed at Live Aid. So it's kind of like a small chunk of a bigger story. And I'm sure we won't hear until like much, much later, like maybe after the movie's been released. But I would be interested to know, like, what Sacha Baron Cohen would have wanted to do with the project versus what they ended up doing.
For sure. So we're going to move on to the TV show news. And we have a couple of stories sort of in succession that all kind of have a flair of the same, which is, again, what we will be devoting our patron bonus segment, which is talking about this idea that the TV show get canceled, and then it's kind of cancellation is sort of feels like a rallying cry for the fandom to see, all right, well, let's see if you can, you know, drum up some excitement. Can we get this going again? So the first one that sort of suffered this weird fate and that had a weird little whirlwind this week on Twitter was Brooklyn Nine-Nine, who, as you guys know, I am now a huge fan of after initially being a little bit iffy on it, but now I love it. So it got canceled on Thursday at Fox, and it was terrible. It is a weird feeling, like you don't really know what you have until it's gone. You know, Brooklyn Nine-Nine was definitely one of those things, like people kept saying, I can't believe like it's not renewed yet, what's happening, what are they waiting for? And I was kind of like, well, of course it's gonna be renewed, it's Brooklyn Nine-Nine, it's an institution. Then it got canceled. And I had that same just total stomach dropping, like, oh my god, I am not ready to live in a world without Captain Raymond Holt and Jake Peralta and Rosa Diaz and all those wonderful, wonderful characters. So, you know, fans and all the actors came out on Twitter and they were like, thank you so much for this journey. This has meant so much to us, blah, blah, blah. Fans started, you know, the actors had been saying before the cancellation to tweet their support, and people have been doing that. But then after that, they kind of began to sort of make their concessions, but fans kept tweeting and they got it trending, and the news were that the producers were still looking for a new home for it. And over the course of the next day, we began hearing, you know, Hulu that swept in and saved the Mindy Project, they said no. Netflix said no because they're no longer really saving series. I think another network said no. And it kind of did seem hopeless. But then NBC on Friday, it was announced that NBC had decided to pick it up for a 13 episode sixth season. So it's not even like, oh, it's going to get like a few episodes to tie everything up. It's actually getting a whole 13 episode season. It's not necessarily the last season even, but we'll have to wait and see about that. So this is fantastic news. And it's an NBC is such a good fit because that's the home of literally all of Mike Schur's other series. You know, it's where The Office was. It's where Parks and Rec was. It's where The Good Place is. And now Brooklyn Nine-Nine, it sort of feels like it should always have been there. Like it's coming home in a way. So it's wonderful news. It's been such a whirlwind. I know there are people saying that actually NBC like was already kind of positioned to pick it up. They just wanted to stir up some fan excitement first. If that's the case, then it's mean, but it worked. And sometimes I do think that, I mean, sorry, but it's true. Like this is the best kind of free advertisement that you can give any show is canceling it and then seeing fans just set in all sails to rally support for it and all watch live and all do all these things. So whether or not it was a ploy, it worked. And we're getting another season of Brooklyn Nine-Nine. So I'm very, very happy. I don't know if you were following along on this. I know we haven't watched it, but...
Oh, yeah. I was on breaking news duty. So all of the Brooklyn Nine-Nine stories that went up on Hypeable are actually stories that I wrote up. So,
okay.
Yeah. It was a crazy few days. Like, well, not a few days, like 30 hours, literally. Yeah. I was watching The Daily Show with Trevor Noah. He has Terry Crews on. And Terry Crews was talking about how crazy it was because he was like, I got the email. And then we were like, oh, no. And then he's like, 30 hours later, we got picked up. And it was like the longest 30 hours of our lives. I was like, I get that, you know?
Yeah.
But like so inspiring to see the fandom, like all fandom, celebrity fans, like everybody rallying together to save this little show that deserves to be saved.
Guillermo del Toro and Lin-Manuel Miranda.
Lin-Manuel Miranda, Seth Meyers, Questlove.
Sam from Lord of the Rings, what is his name? Yeah, Sean Astin. They were all in a group chat together. It was hilarious.
Mm-hmm. And it's really nice, too, because, you know, like this show does a really great job, I know, of just like representing a lot of different facets of humanity and still mm-hmm. manages to be funny without being like offensive. And it's just like a breath of fresh air. So it's just really nice to see that there's a network willing to take a chance on that.
Yeah, it's really cool. I'm just so happy. And I know one of our listeners, Meg, was really, really upset about this, obviously, because it was very upsetting. So everyone's just happy now. And everyone sort of can appreciate Brooklyn Nine-Nine even more than they already did. And it's going to be great. I'm so happy. And kind of like going along the same line, I always also wanted to mention a show that neither of us watch, but that is kind of going through the same thing right now, which is The Expanse over on Sci-Fi, which is it has like 100% on Rotten Tomatoes. It's the highest rated show. It's really like epic sci-fi. I've only watched a few episodes. I'm not really hooked on it yet, but the fan base it loves it, obviously. It's a huge success and it got canceled and nobody really knows why. Because it did so well and it's such a critical success. And people are sort of asking, like, what the hell does it take to be a successful TV show if the most successful show on the network gets canceled and there's only a couple of episodes left? They don't even get to wrap it up. It's all like very sort of a frustrating situation. So they are right now working to see if they can't get it renewed or save it somehow. And I don't know what's going to come of it, but it's worth keeping an eye on too, because that it feels like another show that is... It would be very unfair and a blow to the fan base that it has. So,
totally. Well, another show that's still on it's still kind of hanging on by a thread, we should say. They've not lost out hope by any means, is Lucifer, which is also canceled by Fox. I'm not sure if you watch this show. I really enjoy it, although I am behind, so maybe I am to blame for this cancellation and for the show being on the bubble or people like me. But I think Lucifer is so, so, so much fun. So for anybody that is not aware, the show is based off of characters created by Neil Gaiman and Sam Keith, and it follows Lucifer, of course, the original fallen angel, and he is dissatisfied with his life in hell, so he decides to abandon the throne and retire to Los Angeles, and he is like... you know, he owns this like swanky nightclub and is all about, you know, his different flavor of the week. And then things kind of take a turn when his life gets upended after a murder takes place outside of his nightclub. And originally he's trying to get to the bottom of it because it's bad for business. And then he ends up pairing up with this female detective who's on the case. And it turns into like this unusual pairing buddy cop comedy with like a lot of supernatural elements and like some drama mixed in because they're like solving cases together. And yeah, it's just like a super fun show. And it's got a very passionate and dedicated fan base. So when Fox decided they were going to give the show the axe, fans sprang into action just like Brooklyn Nine-Nine fans did. And they've been trying to save Lucifer ever since. So the interesting thing about this is that the cast is also going all in for the Save Lucifer campaign. Tom Ellis, specifically, who plays Lucifer, has been doing press nonstop since this decision came down. And it's anybody's guess to see if anyone will actually pick it up. But it's a really awesome show. And the fan base is super passionate. And the cast like clearly wants to come back for another season. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, and this is another show that ended on, like, apparently it ends on such an unsatisfying cliffhanger that fans are going to be really mad. So
yes, the showrunner tweeted about that, actually. He was like, it was meant to be a big cliffhanger, but now it's going to be a big disappointment because, like, we don't have a place to tell you the next chapter of the story. So.
Oh, man.
Yeah. To be fair, completely, like, apples and oranges in terms of genres, but what is that show? The country show. The country music show. Connie Britton.
Nashville?
Nashville, yes. Nashville did the same thing when ABC cut it. And it was mean. The finale that ended up being like the series finale because ABC decided to cut it. And then CMT picked it up and they were able to tell the end of that story on another network. So there is hope. It's happened before.
Yeah, there is hope. So moving on to talk a little bit about the CW, over the past just like 24 hours, actually, we've learned a lot about what's coming up for the CW, and three series are actually having their final seasons next year. So Jane the Virgin and Crazy Ex-Girlfriend and iZombie are all given a final season. So this kind of continues the CW's trend of granting a final season to departing shows to allow them to wrap up their story, which is a wonderful thing that all networks should do, really. And also gives me a lot of hope because The 100 has been renewed, but it hasn't been given a final season order yet. So, touch wood. We will see. But unfortunately, the CW slate isn't all good. Because some of the new pilots were picked up to series, including the Roswell one that has a new poster on it. It looks great. I'm still kind of excited for Roswell, but we'll have to wait for that for a while because it's not coming this fall. But the Charmed reboot was also picked up. There's a trailer out for it now. I will allow you guys to judge it for itself and will say nothing because I'm trying to be nice. But unfortunately, probably the biggest surprise and the biggest shock, because it seemed like the easiest hit for the CW, Wayward Sisters, was not picked up. And that's obviously the Supernatural spinoff, which has been in the works for years and which has been layered into the last few seasons of Supernatural. They have a full cast. They have big ideas. Supernatural is in its like 13th season, and the people behind Supernatural, some of the same writers working on Wayward Sisters. It was meant to follow women in the same world and potentially cross over with Supernatural and sort of expand that world. And it didn't get picked up. And when it just at the upfronts earlier today when we're recording, Mark Pedowitz, the CW president, said that it didn't measure up to what they were hoping for. He said, "We had really great material this year. We're really excited about the five series we did pick up. We're big fans of the characters and the women who played the characters in the series, but we did not feel creatively the show is where it wanted to be. We felt we had a bigger shot with Legacies, which is the Vampire Diaries, second Vampire Diaries spinoff." So people are like really mad about this, and including the people in Supernatural who had been doing a petition, they'd been spreading the word, they'd been trying to like give it a second break as well, like the series we just talked about. And honestly, I mean, I have not seen this pilot. For all I know, it was terrible. I know Jason Rothenberg had a pilot turned down last year as well, which apparently the premise sounded amazing. But if the pilot was bad, then the pilot was bad. I get that. We've suffered the same loss with The Selection twice. But I honestly think, I don't understand. I'm totally with Natalie on this, who's obviously devastated over in Hyperbole. I just don't understand, because even if the pilot was bad, this is a show, like a lot of pilots are bad, especially on the CW. I mean, the 100 pilot was bad. Okay, I will say the trailer for Charmed is terrible. It's terrible. The acting is terrible. Everything is terrible. But I mean, it has potential, right? Like, this has potential as well. The Wayward Sisters was a surefire bet. It had a built-in audience. It had room to grow. It could bring in the supernatural characters. It could bring in the supernatural writers. Supernatural's been on the air for 13 seasons, and it's not always amazing, but it's always good. And like, I just think, I don't know. I'm really sort of, I know this is just like network politics, but I just don't understand. I think this kind of goes against the CW's sort of general brand of, like, it's the family of the CW, you know, like they stick to their own, they have a family, they built on existing brands, they've kept Supernatural around for so long. This just, I know that Supernatural is not like, not going to go on forever, but it just seems so weird to me. Like, I don't understand is what I'm trying to say. Like, it's weird. Like, compared to everything else the CW is doing and everything else that's getting right, it just seems so strange that they would not just pick up the show, you know, give it a chance, give it a season.
Yeah, no, I think that that's the thing that's the most perplexing, because if it was a standalone pilot from the Supernatural showrunners, you know, like comparing right. it to maybe what happened with Jason's show, then if the pilot was bad, I get not wanting to take a chance on that. But to have a built-in passionate fan base, like, you can't even say like, oh, well, like, they went with the easy choice, which was Vampire Diaries, because, you know, they have a built-in fan base, but like, so does Supernatural. So that's
right.
That's yeah. where things start getting a little cloudy and a little hard to stomach for this, especially because all they would have had to do was go online to see the hype surrounding the series that even before it had the potential to go to pilot.
Yeah, exactly. Like, so what? I'm almost, so what if the pilot is bad? Like, it literally does not matter, because the potential is still there. Ugh, I just, oh,
it has
gosh.
To be something like, else.
It has to be something else. Like, they put Dynasty mm-hmm. on the air, for God's sakes. Like, it's not about quality.
Wow.
It's not. Like, it's that's not what the deciding factor here. It can't be. But I do wonder what it is, especially because Mark Pedowitz legitimately is committed to Supernatural, and he is committed to that creative team and those actors. So this is so weird. And I can't even be like, oh, he hates women, because look at the rest of the programming on the CW. Like
it's very women-oriented.
It's very women-oriented.
Because they know that, like, women make up the majority of their viewers, too.
Yeah.
Like,
mm-hmm.
I don't know.
I don't know either. We'll keep an eye on this, but it really looks like it's not going anywhere. And I don't know if there's any hope for it. The creators keep talking about it, and they keep promoting the petition and stuff, but I guess there's always next year. I don't know.
I'm really happy, by the way, that, like, they came out, and this is, like, purely selfish, but, like, before we got an explanation for this, I saw a lot of people on Twitter, like, upset. They're like, oh, like, they just wanted to make room for, like, the Charmed reboot and the Roswell reboot, and it's like, okay, like, that's kind of, like, mm-hmm. mean, you know? So I'm yeah. kind of glad to hear that they just wanted to go with one spinoff over the other in a strange yeah. way, because I really just, like, the thing that really upsets me about, like cuts and stuff is always when people peg other shows against each other, mm-hmm. you know, it's mm-hmm. just like, yeah. it's unfortunate, because it's all like personal preference, but it's not that other cast's fault, or it's not that other show's fault. And fans of other things shouldn't feel guilty because their show got saved. And, you know, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know where I'm going with this, but yeah. Well, here's some new pilot news that will maybe brighten some of your days. Harry Styles, international pop star extraordinaire, is, of course, very busy with his ongoing world tour. But that's not stopping him from dipping his toes into a new venture. He's actually going to be producing a brand new sitcom coming to CBS this fall. No, this is not a joke. The show is called Happy Together, and it stars Damon Wayans Jr. and Amber Stevens West. And the series centers around a couple in their 30s who are happily married and living in the suburbs. Then their life gets a major shakeup when a young pop star is unexpectedly, like, living with them in their house. So... Obviously, the pop star angle, that definitely makes sense if Harry just wanted to try out producing. But the pilot actually hits a little bit more, like, a little bit closer to home to him than maybe, like, the casual fan might know, because the show is also being co-produced by Ben Winston, who notably is a producer on The Late Late Show with James Corden and has also been heavily involved in some One Direction projects in the past. So this show is actually based off of a point in both of their real lives when Harry was living with Ben and his wife in the suburbs of London. So it's kind of like this little snapshot of a portion of their lives, which was very real, which I think makes the story even more fun. And I'm all about the new sitcoms. Really, this kind of feels like something that honestly should be on the Disney Channel, but I'm down for it. I think that this is super cute, and I'll be curious to watch at least the first episode. So if you guys are interested in checking that out with me, you'll be able to watch Happy Together this fall on CBS on Monday nights at the 8:30 p.m. slot.
Cool. That makes me more excited about this. I was like, oh, sure, like, everyone tries to be producer, but it's fun that it's like a personal story.
Yeah, it totally, like Damon Wayans. It was one of those things where, like, as I kept reading the story, I was like, all right. And then, like, when we got to the part where it was like, oh, but it's based off of, like, his real life, kind of, it's like, oh, okay, that's great.
Yeah. Our final story of the news is another exciting, in my opinion, an exciting TV story, which is we have a little bit more information about Amazon's Lord of the Rings TV series, which, by the way, for posterity, I've always been for this. Like, I love the books, I love the movies, I am probably going to love this TV show. And now we are learning that it could potentially be, reports have come from Slash Film and the OneRing.net, so it seems likely that this is true, that the series will focus on the young years of Aragorn. So if you guys are paying attention to Hypeable, and if you've been reading up, I wrote an article back a couple of months ago about the potential for an Aragorn-centric Lord of the Rings story. So Aragorn, obviously, when we meet him in Lord of the Rings, he's like 87, and he's lived a long life. He's lived with the elves. He has fought in the armies of Theoden and Gondor, you know, Rohan and Gondor. He's met Gandalf, he's been on adventures, he's fallen in love with Arwen, and there's so much there that it seemed, you know, when I was writing my article, I was like, well, this is pretty much like the only thing that makes sense, because there's so much story there. And there's also the potential, kind of like, funnily enough, the Fantastic Beasts, what they are to Harry Potter is kind of what this series could be to Lord of the Rings, because it's not exactly a prequel, but it does chronicle the rise of a darkness. You know, this is the time when darkness had not yet crept over Middle Earth, but it was starting to. So men were already being corrupted. Sauron was already stirring. There was evil spreading. And I think Lord of the Rings, in so many ways, is such a hopeful tale of evil being defeated. But this is a story of evil rising. And seen through the eyes of Aragorn, you know, obviously being a little bit more grim, being a little bit more inspired by Game of Thrones, which in turn was inspired by The Lord of the Rings, you know, it comes full circle. It's all King Arthur. I think this could be really good. Like, I'm legitimately, even though I'm sure they're not actually going to cast Idris Elba as Aragorn, which is my secret dream. But even if they don't, I think there is potential here. I am very excited for this. I love the world that Tolkien has created, and it's so much bigger than Lord of the Rings, and so much bigger than Peter Jackson's visual take, even though I do love that.
I'm kind of like really into this idea. Mm-hmm. I love this a lot because I and it's so funny because I think that when they first announced this, I had no preferences, but I wasn't really quite sure what they were going to do with this, you know, because there's so many avenues they could have gone with. And I was a little like, I think like in the back of my mind, I might have had some reservations about them choosing to go with a character that was so close to like, you know, the story that we've already gotten slices of. But this makes so much sense that I just like, I love this. And it has like the potential to span because J.R.R. Tolkien's world is so rich, you know, and there's so much like untapped potential there in terms of bringing Aragorn's story onto the small screen. Like they have the potential to really like make this series well and make it last for like a fair few seasons.
Yeah, totally. Like I really agree. I know people are like, oh, we don't need it. We have the movies. Yes, we do. We'll always have the movies. But this is a much richer world.
It would kind of be like if Game of Thrones wanted to come back and do like Dunkin' Egg, you know?
Right, which they do. I mean, they're working on like 7 spinoff series right now.
Right. Which is like it would literally be like the story that you would get right before what we know.
Anyway, I'm excited and we will keep you updated on this and a lot of other news stories. Moving into TV show of the week now. We'll tell you what we've been watching. Pam, what have you been watching?
Well, I watched, thanks to a bunch of screeners, I watched all of season one of Starz's new series, Vita. But I believe they've only aired the first 2 episodes. And this show is really interesting because it's the first show, I believe, with an entirely Latinx writer's room. And it makes so much sense in the context of the story that they're trying to tell. So for those of you guys who don't know what Vita is, it's a drama series centered on 2 Mexican-American siblings. They're originally from East LA, but they move away from there and they live 2 separate lives and are kind of estranged. So Lynn is the younger sister and she's kind of like really carefree, hippie living in the Bay Area, and her sister Emma is actually living in Chicago, and she's very like type A uptight businesswoman, and they end up having to come back to their old stomping grounds of East LA, very different from the lives that they're living now as adults, because their mother dies, and having to be back kind of forces them to reconcile with like their lost identity, but also with a very huge part of their mother's identity, which they had like no idea really existed. And it turns out that their mother, in the time that they've been gone and like when she, like before she got sick and during, like she actually got married and she is a lesbian. So there's so many different like factors in here. And as the story progresses, you realize that there's a lot of issues that are like even deeper than like what like you saw on the surface. And there's also like this whole subplot surrounding one of Lynn's old flame's younger sisters, who's like a Chicano activist. And like, and so like they dive into that and gentrification. And they throw on words like white Tina, you know, like a whitewashed light white, like a whitewashed Latin person. And it's just like, it's really interesting. I've never really seen a show like this. And it's really awesome to see that, you know, a network like Starz has taken a chance on putting a show out there that's shining a spotlight on a very big portion of the American population, but also has employed an entire Latin writer's room to do it. Like, that's the best case scenario. And
yeah,
if you have access to Starz, I highly recommend checking it out. And even if you don't, Starz has actually made the pilot free to stream if you go onto their website. So you can definitely check out the first episode if you're interested.
That's really cool. Mine isn't as exciting. I say it is pretty exciting, but not as exciting as that. I'm going to be talking a little bit about Timeless Season 2. And actually, I do want to try to see if we can't get Shauna on here to talk about it a little bit more, because she's our writer who covers it for Hypeable, and she's been doing an amazing job. She's been getting some great interviews. Timeless still has not been renewed for season 3 by NBC. I'm walking around like with a little bit of like a stone in my stomach, wondering if they might not have given Timeless spot to Brooklyn Nine-Nine. So, so I'm like just quietly waiting and seeing what happens. But Timeless, obviously, that was kind of the show that started this whole second wave of, oh, if we just make enough noise, we can get our show renewed. So obviously all the fans are trying to do the same now, and I hope for them that it works. I've spoken before about how Timeless is not necessarily my favorite show. You know, I continue to sort of take issue with its treatment of history, you know, for a show that supposedly is all about teaching its audience history. It makes so many arbitrary changes that never really seem to pay off unless the story needs it to, which is a bit frustrating. However, the story itself, the characters are great. I think, especially in season 2, they're focusing more on some of the secondary players and the team. Gia and Agent Christopher, in particular, are really wonderful characters to follow, and I really enjoy them. One of the last episodes of season 2 was like an Agent Christopher origin story, which was fantastic. She is far and away my favorite. Sakina Jeffrey is a star. I love her. And then in the finale, things got super interesting. I don't want to spoil anything, especially because I think Pam might eventually watch it, but they did one of those things that you can do with time travel. There are like a handful of things that time travel stories tend to do eventually, and it did one of them, and I thought it was a really, really cool twist, and I think it changes the story in a really interesting way, and it's leaving, you know, a couple of characters' fates up in the air. It killed off a bunch of characters, actually. I was surprised by how many we lost, but not any of the ones that I thought we were going to lose, so I'm happy about that. And I hope it gets to season 3, because I think it's getting better and better. And like, if nothing else, the show is really enjoyable. The characters are really enjoyable. They have done a thing which really annoys me with, you know, the main guy's love. They kind of pulled an Alias with like a love triangle. Like, if you guys have seen Alias, you know what I mean. The main guy was Vaughn in Alias, like, was married, and then the woman was obviously had to be evil, because otherwise they couldn't get like the main couple back together. And Timeless is like doing the same thing, and it's really frustrating, because it's like such a cliche and such a woman. It feels like we've moved beyond that, you know. You don't have to make one of the women evil, you know. So that annoys me, but other than that, I really like it, and I really hope it gets to season 2, 3. And that's it. Yeah, that's my review. My brother, however, loves the show. This is the show, it was made for him. It's like enough of a procedural that he can really easily follow along with it, but it has enough like soapy drama that he's like, he finds it so salacious. And he'll watch it, and he'll like run into my room, and he'll be like, I can't believe that this character did that, and then this character said that, and blah, 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 blah. And he's like in love with the like semi-villain Flynn character, and he like, he's so funny. So yeah, my brother loves it, and I still think it is pretty good. And that's it. All right. So we're going to finish up, as always, with listener feedback, where we hear from you, the listeners. And we have a couple of tweets this week. So let's start off with Emmy Foss. Pam, take it away.
All right. Emmy says, being the only one in the world who still hasn't seen Infinity War because I'm waiting for my sister to finish her exams. I can't explain how fast I hit the skip button at the end of Hype 186 and thankfully successfully, still by some miracle, unspoiled. Well, Emmy, good luck, and good luck to your sister on her exams, and hopefully you're able to get to the theater soon.
I hope so. Betty Anderson says, I wasn't at Comic-Con Copenhagen the first day, so I didn't hear about Richard and Lee and the very sudden phone call. That was so great of him. And their Q&A was so much fun. They both seemed like such great people, and I really enjoyed it. I also agree with you about the event being too small this year. I heard it wasn't very successful last time, so they had to make it smaller this year. I think I saw you there, though, Selena. But as you were there with your family, I didn't want to bother you. I'm way too shy. Aw, well, hello, Betty. I wish you'd come say hello, but you are right. I was very busy with my family. You probably saw me carrying around a four-year-old who refused to walk on her own because she was scared of the stormtroopers. So, well, actually, I think she's six.
That's
now.
So sweet.
She sometimes acts like a four-year-old. But she's very sweet. It was my niece and nephew and brother. We were all there together. And I actually felt really bad because there were a group of the 100 fans there. Not Betty, clearly, because I didn't see Betty, but some other fans. And I had promised I would talk to them, but my niece was so shy and so afraid that I couldn't stop for like 2 seconds. And like I said last time, we were like on the hunt for Wonder Woman. So we spent like 3 hours running around looking for someone in a Wonder Woman costume. And she was like so mad that we couldn't find anyone. So yeah, so it would have, I wish you'd been there the first day because I was a lot more chill then. But I hope you had a good time. I will say I think the panel the first day was better than the one on the second day. But they were both pretty great. And if you are the 100 fan, I will have my interview with Richard up on the site Friday, so the same day that this podcast episode goes up. So next time, make sure to say hello. I'm also shy, but we can make it work, I'm sure. Okay, so we have one from Laura as well.
Yes, Emmy, look away.
Oh no.
You still haven't seen Bye, Avengers. Emmy. All right. For everybody else, Laura says, this is not even a big spoiler, but just in case. She says, so I finally saw Avengers and I was 100% wrong and really stunned. All I can say is, I guess Captain Marvel best come to the rescue or I'm going to be so devastated.
Yes, same. Jessica says, can't wait to listen to the new episode. Also, are you girls still doing Patreon Infinity War spoilers discussion? I'm very excited to hear your opinion. Did we do that? Yes, we did.
It's up on Patreon right now. Yeah.
Cool. So it's there, Jessica. Yeah. Go check it out.
This was like a bit of a, I think that this tweet we got like a while ago, but I just wanted to make sure that if you haven't checked Patreon in a while, our Infinity War spoiler discussion is on there for anybody who wishes to enjoy it that's subscribed over there.
Awesome. So if you guys are interested in being a Patreon subscriber for $2 a month and getting all our bonus segments, then you can head on over to patreon.com/hypepodcast. You can send us a tweet at hypeablehype and you can email us, which is hype@hypeable.com. If you have anything to say about anything we talked about or any recommendations for us. Until next time, have a wonderful week. My name is Selena.
And my name is Pamela.
Bye.